I want to talk for a while, not long tonight, but in a series, picking out some of the things that I've done before, dealing with the study of evolution, and that, of course, by contrast to creation. What we're doing is actually looking at scientific principles and some of what the scientists say that give you the actual things that you could speak to concerning, you know, I have a question, you say, to the scientist who seems to take the position of evolution. And this is under the general head that organic evolution has never been observed. Back when the scientific method was being invented, after coming out of the years of superstition, the Dark Ages, dark in the sense that no history was written, hard to discover what was going on back then, they began making scientific discoveries. Now, most of these people were Bible-believing people that were in name, at least, Christian. And most of the great discoveries were made by people that were holding on to this. It wasn't until the 1800s and Darwin popularized the idea of evolution that the scientific community, if you can call it that, began to settle on evolution as the only logical way to avoid believing in God and creation. So we want to look tonight at the law of biogenesis. If you understand the meaning of root terms, bio is life and genesis is beginning. And so the beginning of life. This is, you know, God says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He created energy and matter, including light, there at the very beginning. Then he created life. And he just didn't wait until the non-life turned into life, popped into life. The law of biogenesis is that life comes from life. Life begins with life. You have to have life to produce life. Now, that obviously runs contrary to the theory of evolution that says that there was nothing for quite a while, and then it evolved into something. There was something there that wasn't there before. Song of Beauty and the Beast. And then the something turned into living something. Just grew into it, see? And this, if you just understood what evolution is saying, you would have to have such great faith in accidents, such great faith in things that don't happen now, has never been noticed to be happening, and to the degree possible has been proved false over and over and over again. We've talked before about the second law of thermodynamics, and the two laws of thermodynamics came out of the study of steam engine and transferal of energy from a steam engine, transferring it over. So they calculated how much energy was being produced by the steam motor. And then they took it on down and they found that somewhere they lost some of the energy. And so they were working to streamline it to where they could keep as much energy as was being made and transfer it on down to finally when you get it into the factory and it's doing stuff. They finally recognized that in every exchange, so the energy of the heat itself that produces the steam, it's reduced, the energy is reduced a bit once it turns into steam. Part of the energy is just lost. So you don't get as much steam energy as you had heat energy. The steam energy then is transferred into mechanical energy, but again, some of the energy dissipates, and you don't have as much mechanical energy as you had with the steam power pushing it. So that came up with the law, second law of thermodynamics, that in every exchange of energy, some energy is lost. That means over the long run, everything is running down. Everything is becoming less structured, more random, more less cosmetic, harmonious, and more chaotic. Things are running down. Buildings left to themselves, no energy put into them, will end up decaying and crumbling. That is then something that fights entirely against the entire principle of evolution, where everything is growing better and better, bigger and bigger. This is another one, the law of biogenesis. And I don't use the term out of school here, the law. This is opposite spontaneous generation. The rabbit being pulled out of the hat is a magic trick. The rabbit was really there someplace being hidden, or it was a puppet rabbit or something. You can't bring life out of nothing. So spontaneous generation, the emergence of life from non-living matter, has never been observed. All observations have shown that life comes only from life. That's biogenesis. This has been observed so consistently, without fail, it is called the law of biogenesis. Now, the theory of evolution conflicts with this scientific law when claiming that life came from non-living matter through natural processes. Natural meaning nobody was there putting energy into it to make it happen. Yet, leading evolutionists are forced to accept some form of spontaneous generation. In an authority no less than the game Jeopardy, I noticed now twice a question has been asked in the area of science about the study of life from non-living things. And I thought it was interesting that one of the contestants, his guess was spontaneous generation, which is actually correct in all logic. Life coming from non-life is spontaneous generation. And he was wrong. They had another name for it, and it was like non-life biogenesis or something like that. It was, the study being done about how life came from non-life. So they're still at it, still, but they're just not calling it spontaneous generation now. Leading evolutionists are forced to accept some form of spontaneous generation. That's what we're seeing. For example, a former Harvard University professor and a Nobel Prize winner in physiology and medicine acknowledged the dilemma. George Wald is his name. He wrote the article Origin of Life in the magazine Scientific American, volume 190, August 1954, page 46. The reasonable view during the two centuries before Louis Pasteur was to believe in spontaneous generation. The only alternative to believe in a single primary act of supernatural creation. There is no third position. So he analyzed it down to that you can have creation or you can have spontaneous burst of life for no good reason. Wald rejects creation despite the impossible odds of spontaneous generation. Wald, as above in that same article, one has only to contemplate the magnitude of this task to concede that the spontaneous generation of a living organism is impossible. Yet here we are. As a result, I believe in spontaneous generation. Later, Wald appeals to huge amounts of time to accomplish what seemed to be the impossibility of spontaneous generation. You know, this whole thing, I mean, for instance, if you flip a coin, it'll land up heads or tails. Once in a great while, it'll land on its edge. Give it enough time, it'll land on its edge. But how long will you have to do it when it can land on both heads and tails? It can't happen. See, that doesn't happen. And no matter how much time you give it billions and billions of years, and it will never do that. There's some things that just can't happen. So, walled as above, one has, no, see, where am I? Yeah, huge amount of times. Time is, in fact, the hero of the plot. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible. The possible, probable, and the probable, virtually certain. One has only to wait. Time itself performs the miracles. So, he's renamed God and called him Time. Time created us. Brought life out of nothing. What Walt did not appreciate in 1954, because that was before, just one example, the genetic code was discovered. The DNA. What did that signify? It signified, think about it, that in this accidentally created life, there was a molecule that actually set out a code of how that being was to develop as it grew. So the child in the womb, the body begins, and then arms grow, and then finally fingers, and then fingernails. It doesn't start with fingernails and move to tailbone, and then, you know, it's just not random like you would expect if it came out of randomness. It's a plan. There's a heart beating long before there's other things that can work. A big head, a brain that's controlling these things. So, how wishful do you have to be to imagine that in this accidental happening by time, there was an accidental language formed, chemical language that dictated exactly how every living being will develop so that it's complete. It's too much. See? So it was before that, so he didn't have to deal with that. He did not appreciate how the complexity in life is vastly greater than anyone at that time could have imagined. That's like Darwin when he said, well, the very simple forms of life just happened. And then they became more complex. So today, people say, what in the world do you mean by simple forms of life? They go down with the electron microscopes and they look at these tiny, to us, invisible pieces of life, and they're entirely complex. A little protozoa. You've heard of protozoa? Protozoa is this little thing, and it has a rotary motor at the back that he goes and he spins through the liquid that he's living in. I mean, there it's a curved hard hair thing comes in, and it's shaped like a very odd gear, and then there's muscles all surrounding it that just keep moving from one gear to the other. It's a little motor. Somebody had to figure that out, see? Give him an outboard motor. And because it was a book called Darwin's Black Box, where the guy says, once we got down there and saw, you can't get down to a simple life form. Everything had to be in place. If that motor didn't work, the protozoa dies because it can't move through the liquid. I'm taking too long on this, but it just irritates me that they're willing to go to such ridiculousness. So today, the impossibility of spontaneous generation is even more firmly established, regardless of the time available. But unfortunately, several generations of professors and textbooks, with Wald's perspective from the 50s, have so impacted our universities that it's difficult for evolutionists to change direction. They're going against a great inertia that's pushing them. Evolutionists who do not recognize, one, they also do not recognize, one, that with increasing time, their miracle maker, you remember, comes increasing degradation of the fragile environment on which life depends. So their idea is that at some incredible moment, given enough time, a little tiny spark of life occurred. And you almost imagine that they have a mother there that wraps it in swaddling clothes, holds it to her bosom to nurture it, you see. But what do you have? Just more time. And so if it takes, what, a century for this thing to develop, how strong is it? It's just a spark of life. It's only a couple of protein things. So the longer time you take, the more time that thing could degrade and stop being alive. The second, that creationists have much better explanations, such as the worldwide flood of Genesis, for the scientific observations that evolutionists thought showed increasing time. The worldwide flood of Noah's day affected the entire planet. Much of coal was formed under the pressure of all the vegetation that was swept under and then pressed down. Sediment rock, there because of all the pressure down there. The mountains were crunched, the land mass was crunched together and formed mountains that hadn't been there before. It explains a lot. All the fossils came by the cataclysm of the flood. Evolutionary scientists reluctantly accept the law of biogenesis. J.W.N. Sullivan, in his book, The Limitations of Science, says the beginning of the evolutionary process raises a question which is as yet unanswerable. By faith, they believe it can be answered or will be answered, but by faith, not by science. What was the origin of life on this planet? You're hearing more and more of these people looking out into space, SETI, S-E-T-I, search for extraterrestrial something, intelligence, I think. And they're expecting the answer for planet Earth is that somebody came and put it here, an alien. But where did that life come from? See? Did it just pop into existence someplace else and then come here? What was the origin of life on this planet? Until fairly recent times, there was a pretty general belief in the occurrence of spontaneous generation. It was supposed that lowly forms of life developed spontaneously from, for example, putrefying meat, which I think was life, right? But, and that was where putrefying meat, worms, popped into existence because it was around putrefying meat. See, that was their thought. But careful experiments, notably by those of Louis Pasteur and his wife, showed that this conclusion was due to imperfect observation. And it became an accepted doctrine, the law of biogenesis, that life comes only from life. That life never arises except from life. So far as actual evidence goes, this is still the only possible conclusion. See, this is my point about scientific method. It had to be observable and repeatable to be scientifically true. Evolution is just a theory that cannot be repeated and has never been observed. But since it is a conclusion that seems to lead back to some supernatural creative act, it is a conclusion that scientific men find very difficult of acceptance. It carries with it what are felt to be, in the present mental climate, undesirable philosophic implications. If there is a God who created, then I have to answer to that God, and I don't want to. That's undesirable philosophic implications. And it is opposed to the scientific desire for continuity, that all things continue as they were from the beginning, Peter tells us. It introduces an unaccountable break in the chain of causation, and therefore cannot be admitted as part of science unless it is quite impossible to reject it. For that reason, most scientific men prefer to believe that life arose in some way not yet understood from inorganic matter in accordance with the laws of physics and chemistry. Final paragraph. However, some say that future studies may show how life could come from lifeless matter, despite the virtually impossible odds. Others say that their theory of evolution doesn't begin until the first life somehow arose. Still others say the first life was created and then evolution occurred. All evolutionists recognize that based on scientific observations, life comes only from life, the law of biogenesis. So if you will not forget the term, it'll be an interesting thing to bring up. Well, I had a question about biogenesis and your theory of evolution.